Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello and welcome to the Analyst Inside Cricket. A somber start to the programme this week in memory of all those victims in New Zealand and that terrible shooting just close to where Bangladesh and New Zealand were about to play the test match, the third test. And of course, the tour as a result was cancelled. A terrible moment for the world and the world of sport and the world of cricket. And I suppose, in a way, a poignant reminder of something that happened almost exactly 10 years ago in Pakistan, when the Sri Lankans were targeted by terrorists before a match in Lahore. And last weekend was also the final of the Pakistan Super League in Karachi. So, well, what terrible incidents we've had to sort of reflect on. But the cricket world will pick itself up and carry on, as hopefully New Zealand will too. Simon, you've read quite an interesting story about that incident.
Tommy Mickbal was just relating how close the Bangladesh team were to the attack on the mosque. It's obviously a tragic incident. Those people are actually caught up in it. The Bangladesh team so close to being caught up in it themselves. They were on their way. I think the reason they weren't there in the mosque at the time was because they stopped for a game of football. A game of football was delayed. They were playing at Hagley Park, which is, you know, we were there a year ago for the England-New Zealand test matches. It's really close to the mosque on the west side of Hagley Park, and they got caught up in a game of football and delayed them going to the mosque, and they actually saw people lying on the ground, and they were in the bus outside for 6 or 7 minutes trying to decide what to do. I, of course, didn't know what was going on. Utter confusion. And in the end, they left the bus and went back through Hagley Park to the Hagley Oval, which is very close by, and the tour was cancelled. And as you say, you know, it was 10 years ago that the Sri Lankan team were targeted. I mean, this is obviously different. They were nearly caught up in it. And they, in Pakistan 10 years ago, that, you know, they were actually targeted, as, you know, Trevor Bayliss and
Paul Farfrae were involved there.
And
Chris Broad, wasn't he, the match referee.
And as they so graphically related and remembered in that programme that was on Five Live not so long ago. And New Zealand clearly are going to review their security policies for future touring teams. It's incredible, actually. I remember in the World Cup, the last World Cup in New Zealand, flying from Christchurch to Dunedin with the New Zealand team, and we did not go through airport security. It was just like getting on a bus. And I said, well, you know, this is really weird. You know, if you come from London, you go through, indeed, if you fly through most airports in the world, you know, massive amounts of security. And it was really noticeable just how different New Zealand was, you know, how much more relaxed it was. You know, the idea of taking a flight without airport security, astonishing, it felt at the time. Well, I mean, I presume that sort of thing from now on is going to change.
Yeah, and I mean, it's obviously going to heighten the necessity for security at the World Cup.
Absolutely.
Even more. I mean, I've been in MCC committee meetings at Lord's where they talk a lot about security. It's the number one issue to consider, really, when we talk about the World Cup. And, of course, we've got India against Pakistan in Old Trafford in the World Cup as well. So lots of things for the authorities to consider after that appalling incident in New Zealand. Let's just change tack and look ahead, though, to, well, both the English season and also the IPL, which starts in a few days' time. It always, at this time of year, sort of March, end of March, I always hark back to the days of when I was playing, which I know is sort of virtually ancient history, but it's sort of the end of March where you suddenly emerge from the indoor nets, or perhaps playing abroad in the winter, to the week of pre-season training, because that's all we did. A week of pre-season training, which was always, in Middlesex's case, at Barclays Bank Gym in Ealing, which is now a derelict, actually, as are Middlesex as well, the way they've been playing, actually, the last year. But we cast into this dusty old gym to try and dust off the cobwebs of a winter of inactivity, basically, if you hadn't been away for the winter. And
if you hadn't been away for the winter, what would you do? What would you do from September to March?
Hardly anything. I mean, most of them. I remember this Glamorgan player called Steve Barwick being asked, you know, what did he do in the winter? And he said, absolutely nothing. I just sat on my arse, basically. and it, you know, it probably looked like it. But if those of us who liked other sports, played football, for instance, I played football once a week and probably went to football training perhaps a couple of times a week.
Or just for a local club.
So I stayed reasonably fit, but I think a lot of players did very little. And suddenly, to have this sort of gut-wrenching, lung-bursting week of shuttles in a gym and a few burpees. I remember Phil Edmonds saying, is this training really necessary? You know, it was a bit of a weird experience, and some five-a-side football, a lot of carbo loading at lunch, a bit more training in the afternoon, home by three. Did that for 5 days, and it was pretty uncomfortable, especially for those who hadn't done it anything in the winter. But then that was it. That was pre-season training done and into the nets. So slightly weird compared to now, where they're doing, you know, the sort of yo-yo test, which is the modern version of the bleep test, or pushing big tyres up and down the indoor school or whatever in November. You know, so training never stops for the modern player.
Well, one of the differences, of course, is that players have got all year round contracts now, whereas you probably had a 6 month contract or summer contract, didn't you?
Yeah. So September the 30th, you handed back your sponsored car and you got your P45 and goodbye, see you in April. Mm-hmm.
The reason we talk about this, of course, is because it's so different now for the players, and they've been in training, and players are still playing all around the world. England players are playing in the Pakistan Super League.
It never ends.
Final.
It's never ending.
They're playing out in the Pakistan Super League, and lots of them are going to play in the IPL as well.
Yeah, so we just looking ahead a bit, we've got a chat with Joss Butler in this programme, and after the break we're going to look at how players practice, or how they will practice, in the future. But,
a bit of tomorrow's world, actually.
A bit of tomorrow's world.
Absolutely fascinating, using virtual reality to practice.
Mm. Just before we go into the IPL and the county season, just give us a quick reflection on that last couple of weeks in the Caribbean. A bit of unravelling from England, you know, with Farbrace finishing his tenure as assistant coach. Mark Ramprakash, we had him on the programme last week, finishing his tenure as batting coach. So a little bit of sort of wobbling in the camp at all, do you think?
Well, it was a really interesting tour overall, I think, the West Indies tour. Salutary for England in the Test series. You know, lots of problems exposed by the West Indies. In the one dayers, 2-2. I mean, I said at the start, I thought England, you know, you'd expect them to win the series. OK, there's one match knocked out. So it ended up 2-2. I thought probably 4-1. At best for West Indies, 3-2. Well, it could have been 3-2. We didn't have that extra game. And, you know, England looked fallible at times. And then the T20 series, West Indies looked right off the pace. And some England players proved themselves. You know, players who perhaps wanted to prove themselves actually took their opportunity.
Like Billings,
who made a breakthrough innings. Chris Jordan bowled really well, and that caught the eye of, I think, you know, the England management.
So you could see Chris Jordan and Billings pushing for the World Cup squad.
I think Jordan and Billings are sort of, you know, among the top reserves, if you like. I think the World Cup squad will be roughly the squad that went out.
Played in the ODIs.
Yeah, that went out for the ODIs, with Jofra Archer, you know, being the wild card.
Instead of, say, well, who knows? Tom Curran, for instance.
Possibly, who knows? Yeah. I mean, there are a few options on the table for that.
So then you've got Denley, you've got Jordan, and you've got Billings, probably as reserves.
Well, Denley might get in. I mean, if who's Archer going to come in for? It could be... It could be Joe Denley, or it could be Tom Curran, or it could be David Willey, or it could be someone who gets injured. You know, who knows? I mean, that's a distinct possibility. So there's that situation, and then there's the sort of behind the scenes situation where I don't know. Owen Morgan runs the white ball team. The test team is, you know, Joe Root is obviously to the fore in that, and you've got some changes there. You've got Mark Ramprakash being knocked out as the batting coach for the Ashes. You've got Paul Farbrace going when, you know, he said, I'll stay on. And you just wonder about sort of Trevor Bayliss's situation there, Trevor Bayliss's role in all this. He's lost Paul Farbrace, who was his main confidant. Did he want Mark Ramprakash to leave as batting coach? I'm not sure that he did, you know. So where does that leave him?
Bit exposed.
Well, in a way, but I suppose he is going as well himself. Yeah. And Ashley Giles has come in, and you know, he's the man that sort of ultimately makes the decisions after consultations. So that, you know, there's that change, that moving around of the pieces behind the scenes as well. What I want, I mean, I don't know. I'm just still thinking totally off the top of my head here. Trevor Bayliss is going at the end of the summer. You know, what if England were to have a really bad World Cup and not, you know, not get to the semi-finals? I think if England don't get to the semi-finals, that would equate to a really bad World Cup, and they've got to make semi-finals as a minimum. You know, would Trevor Bayliss's position be under threat going into the Ashes? It seems far-fetched, but England changed their coach last time going into the Ashes at home in 2015. I'm not saying it's going to happen. Mainly because I think the expectation is England, and hope certainly, is that England will get to the semi-finals. But yeah, Ashley Giles, and perhaps there's some impetus there from Joe Root behind the scenes. You know, is the captain who's running the test team, perhaps, you know, prepared to make some changes in what is a huge year for England cricket. I mean, you know, you've lost the assistant coach and the batting coach in what's a, you know, really big year for England cricket. And you think about stability, don't you? Well, behind the scenes, there's a bit of change going on.
Fragility, and it just shows
or change
how,
anyway.
It just shows how fragile life is as a coach. Actually, that you are very much at the whim of results. You mentioned Jofra Archer there, and he will have the great opportunity to shine and prove himself, not only in the one day as against Pakistan in May, but also in the IPL. He's one of four England players joining the Rajasthan Royals. Their first match is the 27th of March. So the IPL starts on Saturday the 23rd, and the Royals play their first game on the 27th. And he'll be in a squad with Joss Butler, Ben Stokes and Liam Livingstone, who might get a gig occasion. I mean, Liam Livingstone is probably there largely as a reserve for when players like Butler and Stokes return back to England for preparation for the World Cup. But a great opportunity for Archer there to show what he can do in that intense environment. He's done it before. He's played in fact, he bowled two of the fastest deliveries in the IPL last year. So it'll be interesting to see how he's moved on from his experiences in the Big Bash and with the expectation and the sort of spotlight on him.
Yeah. But there will be more focus, won't there, on Archer?
There will be. I mean, Butler seems to be going from strength to strength. I've just done some sums and figured out that since his IPL stint last year, when he joined the Royals for the first time, he's made 1,700 runs for England in all formats, averaged 46, which is the best in the team, better than Root, who only averaged 37 in that period in all formats. So Butler has been really the star of the last 12 months for England. And, I mean, that innings he played in Grenada, you know, was ridiculous. You must have been ducking in the commentary box.
It was a wonderful day. It was a brilliant one day match. I know there were a few people saying, "Oh, is this really proper cricket? Is this what one day cricket's come to? Is your bowlers just looking back over their heads to see the ball disappearing?" But I made this point before a little bit. You know that you've got two of the best 50 over players in the world at their very best on that day, Chris Gayle and Joss Butler,
and playing in very different ways actually too. I mean, Butler just makes hitting the ball look so sort of easy, so nonchalant. So I thought, look, I did a little interview with Butler the other day, and you always think, don't you, when you look at a player like that, he looks so calm at the crease, so confident, and yet actually throughout his career he's had moments of introspection, lack of self-belief. But I think he's figured out now, and partly I think his experiences with the Royals last spring were the kind of turning point. He now knows how to access that more positive mindset more often, and he pays a lot of tribute, actually, to the work he did with Shane Warne at the IPL.
He had a huge influence. I think why the IPL is incredible, the opportunity to meet these people is one of the greats to have ever played the game. And I love listening to him. He's obviously got that aura and great storytelling ability. So I love talking to him and listening about him, and just an incredible outlook on the game, I always thought. Just saw things differently that not everyone could see about the game. And then talking sort of more individually, he gave you so much confidence. And it didn't feel false at all, which I think was a big thing for me, because sometimes you sort of feel like a coach or someone might just be trying to say these things to make you feel good, but it felt like he had a real belief in what he was saying, and gave me a lot of confidence. He actually, before the test call or anything came along, he was actually talking to me about test cricket and saying, where are you at with Red Bull, like, what do you want to do, and why can't you be a success in it, and sort of all this stuff. And when someone like that is talking to you in that way, it just gave me a huge amount of confidence.
Just a little tiny reflection on your amazing innings 150 in Grenada. How totally destroyed the bowling after taking a bit of time to get in, obviously. How are you feeling when you're demolishing the bowlers like that? What's your state of mind? Ruthless, calm, aggressive, pumped up?
I'd say pretty calm, actually. It's fun that you're feeling calm, and actually I remember having a real thing of trying to extend it as long as possible, and being consistent with it. I'm almost trying to talk about going into the zone. It's almost almost meditating, and it's that meditative state of relaxation and calm, but so alert and sharp. The brilliant feeling when you're batting is when your subconscious is just doing everything for you, and you're almost stood there with a blank mind. That's been one thing over the last year I've tried to work on a lot more, is the mental side of it and how to access the zone as it's more consistently, and not just sort of set. You hear people talk about interviews saying, it was just my day today. Well, how come Virat Kohli's day is every day? Like, how does he get to that state every day? So that's something I've tried to work on, and believe that you can do it every single day.
Well, that's Josh Butler on his way to the IPL. You play with hundreds of...
Not actually on the way to the IPL, no. But he will be soon, yeah. Yes.
You play with hundreds of cricketers in your career. Do you think a lack of self-belief was a feature of some, most, nearly all cricketers? I mean, there's so much time, isn't there, on the sidelines to think about the game.
I think it's the biggest issue in the game, actually, is dealing with the expectation, because it's a team game, but it's an individual game within a team game, and you're there's no one to help you. It's like you can't, when you're bowling, you can't pass the ball to another player, or when you're batting, all right, so I suppose you could play a single and give the strike to the other person. That's the equivalent of passing the ball to the winger, but you've still got to face that ball yourself, and it could be out. That ball can dismiss you. And so the whole concept of a death, which is what being out is in cricket, because you can't come back, you don't get a second go, do you? Certainly in a one-day game. So I think, that self-belief is something that's very hard to overcome. And identifying the players that have that strong mentality is very difficult because there's no real measure of it. You know, it's very hard to judge a player when you see them playing in the nets or whatever. Have they got that self-belief to deal with that pressure in a match? And it's... I mean, I remember, you know, bowling the last over in games and I was trying to look outwardly calm. Inside, I was absolutely bricking it. You know, I was...
What was it like
wreck.
When you were bowling that last over?
Well, that's what I mean. Yeah. You know, I was trying to look to the batsman calm, but I've looked back at film of that and I rushed it. You know, I didn't take a deep breath. And
This was the final against Warwickshire,
NatWest final. And I think the trouble is you don't know when you're feeling those nerves whether that's normal or not. Does everybody feel those nerves? I assume.
What, because everyone else seems like a good actor, you mean?
Well, maybe. You know, some are better. Yes, exactly. And some seem to sort of just deal with it. Butler just seems so nonchalant, doesn't he? I mean, there were some run chases he's featured in. There was that match in Sydney, I think, where he got 100 not out against the Australians in a one-day game. He's very proud of that innings. There was some games in the IPL last summer where he was not out 90 to see them home in a tense 20-over game in front of sort of 50,000 screaming fans. So he's obviously got that sort of ice-cool mentality. Morgan has as well. But I know that I don't think I had it. But, you know, are those people really feeling nerves inside and they just know that they can deal with it? The key to nerves is knowing you can deal with it, knowing that it's OK to feel slightly nervous because you know you can handle it.
I think Butler's best one day, and just talking about his performances, actually was that 100 he made against Australia at Old Trafford last summer.
Yes, because that was an innings of various phases, wasn't it?
Because he didn't blaze it everywhere. It wasn't, in a way, it wasn't a typical Butler innings. He had to play with the tail, and it was a last wicket partnership. And it was actually a phenomenally hot day as well. I don't know if you can remember that. It's hard to believe that there was phenomenally hot days when you consider the weather at the moment. But that you talk about that sort of Vic Marks, who's watched him growing up and knows him reasonably well. You know, talks about sort of having ice flowing through his veins, and that he does give that impression, and that sort of almost like that utter ruthlessness that you sort of dead-eyed ruthlessness that you sometimes see in batsmen, that they are going to be the winners. They've decided it almost,
and I think he is the England's trump card in terms of the World Cup. He is the person who, I think, he reads the game very well. He can change gear in an absolute jiffy. He's got that range and ability against any bowling. And I think, you know, you have this, and you're not alone in having this slight worry about England not reading conditions that well and blowing up occasionally. I think Butler is their sort of safety valve, the person who hopefully will see them over those hurdles.
Do you think he's sorted out his technical problems? I mean, one of the problems he had sort of early on in his Test match career, he was sort of playing at the ball outside the off stump, nicking it, feathering it through to the keeper. Is he technically a better player now? Has he still got those flaws that are going to take him down every now and again?
I think he's worked on it a bit, but I think the main thing is that, as we heard from him in that interview, that he's learned to play his way, to trust his natural instincts. And you can't make yourself into a boycott, thank God, or whoever. You know, you're definitely better off. I mean, obviously, you can tinker with your method a bit, but you're better off playing your natural way. So and I think he's become more selective. He's still going to get caught behind occasionally because he doesn't get across quite as much as other batsmen do, and he probably is at the ball a bit more. But he's trying to minimise the number of times he gets out like that, I think, and that's working. So, well, good luck to all those guys playing in the IPL from England. There's lots playing around in other franchises
as well. Do you
have
concerns that there's a big workload with the World Cup coming up and players might get injured? We've seen it in the past. Wokes and Stokes got injured in previous IPLs.
Well, it's more likely to happen with bowlers, isn't it, than batsmen. So, obviously, Archer's going to be one who might need to manage himself a bit.
Stokes.
I saw actually the other day some images of Ben Stokes's toe when he'd been bowling in Australia a couple of years ago when he got terrible blisters. And I mean, he does put his body through some serious pressure. Mark Wood, another one, who let's hope he manages to get through the early season in England and doesn't get injured, because I think he's going to be a key for England in the World Cup as well.
Yeah, if you look at, just talk about the West Indies tour, if you look at, you know, players who really progressed and really came out of it much better players, or much better reputation they went into it, I think Wood is one who did that, definitely. Both, I mean, all three formats. Test, those, that fifer in St Lucia, that 4-for-60 in Grenada, which actually helped England win the game. It rather got lost with Adil Rashid's wickets at the end and Chris Gayle's amazing hitting. But Wood's 4-for-60, absolutely vital in that. And then he came out and took wickets in the T20, so he was given one opportunity, took 3-for-9. So he's someone that's come out with a great deal of credit. I mean, that's one thing he said early in the tour to me. You know, I did an interview with him. You know, I said, you know, you're bowling well. What more can you do? What more do you need? Wickets, he said. You know, I'm not going for many runs, but the wickets column always says 1-for rather than, you know, 5-for or 4-for. Well, he actually put that right towards the end of the tour.
Mm. Yeah, good. Well done to him too, actually, because he's one of those sort of great charismatic figures of English cricket, and you just will him to do well. You want him to do well all the time because of his enthusiasm and passion. So good luck in the start of the season. I think he's going to play for Durham at the start and a couple of the championship games to begin with, and I hope he finds his rhythm and doesn't slip over on a damp bit of outfield or something.
It's hard to believe that the season is two or three weeks
away. I've seen Surrey, by the way, practising already in their tent over the square at the Keir Oval. So players are getting in good nick already, of course. And we should just mention, the Cricketer magazine is out on Friday with our famous wall chart depicting the season, trying to make sense of the very complicated nature of the county season. We've got 21 different colours for all the different formats of the game and competitions and so on, including, of course, the women's tournaments as well. So try and look out for that. If you're not a subscriber, you can go to www.thecricketer.com/magazine, or just thecricketer.com, actually, and you can subscribe to the magazine there. It's our biggest seller because it's got two pages on every county with form and players to watch and all the fixtures neatly listed. So look out for that one, because that is the magazine to have for the summer, The Cricketer.
Hello, this is Shane Warne, and you're listening to the Analyst Inside Cricket Podcast.
Now, if someone had said to me at the age of 12, what would you like for Christmas? What would be your ideal Christmas present? Well, not just at the age of 12, probably 13, 14, 15, 11, 10. It would have been what is being developed by some very clever people, and it is virtual reality batting. Now, we've sort of had a feel for it before with the simulator, at the NatWest simulator at Lords, but there is a company that is trying to develop a simulator that is, what, five times better than that, and really gives you a sense of batting out in the middle.
Mm. Yeah, and in fact, it gave me, it was so realistic that it gave me a sense of deja vu, because I recall with bitter humiliation my attempt to try and score runs off Malcolm Marshall at Lords one day to win a one-day game, and failing miserably, playing and missing a number of times, and eventually walking off even though I hadn't actually hit it. That's the kind of effect that fast bowling certainly had on me anyway. And there I am facing what a bowler that looked a bit like Malcolm Marshall the other day, and trying to get runs off it at Lords, and playing and missing again, being late on the ball. And, of course, I wasn't at Lords at all. I was in a studio in Shoreditch using a virtual reality headset, which transported me straight into the centre at Lords with the stands and the media centre and the pavilion behind me, 360-degree view, a West Indian-looking fast bowler about to bowl who ran in and hurled a few virtual reality deliveries at me. I had a bat in my hand, which was connected to a number of sensors, and I was able to actually try and play that type of bowling with fielders who moved. So when I hit the ball occasionally, I think I only hit the slower balls, I hit the ball through the covers and a fielder chased after it and hurled it back, and the scoreboard showed that I'd scored two. I was able to stand back and watch the ball again and how the bat played the ball, And it was just incredible. I mean, it was that realistic that when I got a bouncer, I ducked.
Mm.
And I was standing in the studio, you know, in the middle of Shoreditch on a very wet day, nowhere near Lords.
And how much better was it than the one we used at Lords last year, you know, the NatWest simulator, which was good fun. You know, you could play a few shots, but yeah. It was hard to get the timing right.
It was very hard. But this was
utterly really, realistic,
totally
was it?
Realistic. I mean, it was so realistic that I was playing and missing just as I imagined or remembered playing and missing when I was actually playing. No, the ball came out of the... You know, the bowler ran into bowl. It's an avatar, so it's based on a real bowler. At the moment, the technology hasn't quite caught up with modern life, so they haven't yet got enough bowlers or the real bowlers that you would actually face in a match, but before long they will have. They'll have a Dale Steyn running into bowl, an avatar version, but with his exact action and with the ball coming out as he would bowl it, at the speed he would bowl it at, a virtual ball. And then the way you play the ball is replicated exactly as you would play it in a match. There's even the sound of the ball right. hitting the bat. There's the death rattle when you miss it and it hits your stumps. So there's crowd noise in your earphones, in your headphones. And actually, one of the points of this technology is not just to test your reflexes and ability at playing 82, 85 miles an hour and swing and all that, but also how you handle pressure. So, you know, the crowd noise are very realistic. So it does sort of up your heart rate.
Any Australians sledging you?
Well, they didn't need to because I wasn't in long enough. But I think that would be, that. You know, Rishabh Pant, in the future, they could bring in a Rishabh Pant-type character, wicketkeeper standing up to the stump with the spinners on, and him saying to you, he's not putting away the bad ball or something like that, which is what he was doing in that series against Australia. So it's got boundless potential, both in terms of speeding up and improving your skills and also in things like registering your heart rate, how you deal with pressurised situations, can you hit two off the last ball with perfect Yorker bowling, practising the ramp shot against Pat Cummins, you know, without getting hit. 14-year-old batsman in their bedroom facing Dale Steyn without getting injured.
And so you could get up in the morning, it'd be fantastic, you get up on Christmas morning, you have your breakfast, you open your presents, you put your virtual headset on, stand in your bedroom all day, and you could bat for 2 hours in the morning, have lunch, 2 hours in the afternoon, have tea, and then, well, Jeffrey used to do it, didn't he?
Yes.
And then bat for another 2 hours, you just go on batting. I mean, what a fantastic tool for someone who is young, because in the winter, you know, it's hard to find a net, isn't it?
It is.
Well, where do you practice?
That's true.
It's different with football. You can just go out in the park and have a kick around, and if you find a field somewhere, or even a bit of concrete somewhere. Cricket, you just lack those facilities. But if you can do just stand in your bedroom and just bat all day, that's absolute heaven. That.
Yeah, it is. I think it could cause some destruction of bedrooms as well, because if you sort of decided to face a few bouncers and you played the hook shot, you could take out the light fittings or, you know, various shelves or whatever, or even the windows, I suppose, if you're in your bedroom. So maybe they need to develop something in the headset where you can actually see a little bit of the outside, the real world as well, because otherwise you could destroy things or hit people, actually.
Let's have a listen to the...
The inventor of this was a lady who's based in Ireland, Cathy Craig. She's a professor of psychology, and she got the idea partly from seeing... amazing free kicks taken in football, and you know, footballers bending the ball round the wall and scoring in the top corner, and thinking, I wonder if I can develop some virtual reality that could help goalkeepers practice. So that was where she started, actually developing virtual reality with the free kick bending round the wall towards you, the goalkeeper, and you, the goalkeeper, is going to try and actually save this virtual ball. And so she's used some experts in virtual reality to develop this for football, rugby and cricket, which she played as a schoolgirl. So let's hear from her.
My passion is decision making, and that there you have to make a decision. So you have to hit a four off the last ball. Where are you going to place that ball? Okay, yes, it's going to depend on the delivery, but you also have to see where the gap between the fielders are, where that space might be, or where the weakness in the fielding lineup is. So, and I think that's where the next step is, because if you think about, for me, this technology has to add value. It has to allow you to do something maybe you can't currently do, or allow you to do it more times than you can currently do. So that ability to hit balls at 90 mile an hour, one after the other is something that's very difficult to do in real life, because to do that in real life, you have to have a bowler who delivers the ball to you at 90 miles per hour. And we know what pressure that puts on that physically, on that player. So to give somebody the mental reps, it's great to have this digital technology that can allow you to do it. But not only that, observe what's happening, pick a space and then do it. And I think what you were able to see maybe today when you tried it yourself was that ability to replay a shot. So immediately you could step to the side and see your action. And that's very informative.
And do you think that ultimately it could give a team a performance advantage?
There is absolutely no reason why practicing in a simulator that preserves what it is that's unique about that simulation, so that it's as close to reality as it can. There's no reason why if you're practicing in that scenario, it doesn't transfer into everyday life. Just look at other areas where you use simulation, flight simulators. So actually pilots can train on a flight simulator and that counts towards their license. You've got surgeons practice in VR to make any mistakes there before they do it. Formula One, so much of their training is done in virtual reality as well. So these other professions are using it. There's no reason why if we get it right that you couldn't do it in for cricket or for any other sport.
Well, that's Cathy Craig. I've talked about how I would love to have used it as a 12-year-old or whatever. In fact, to be honest, if they bring it out, I'll go and buy one, I think, and do it now, because it'd just be so much fun.
Yeah.
Do you think it can be used in the professional game as well? Do you think it would make a huge difference to players in the professional game?
Well, I know that Vincent Kompany, Manchester City, has invested in the football version, and I think once the cricket version has a bit more evolution, definitely it will be great for the professional game, because it's incredibly realistic. They need to get the shots through the field and the fielding a little bit more sophisticated, only a tiny bit, and they need to get more bowlers and, you know, real balls developed, because at the moment there's only probably about 9 or 10 different deliveries from one bowler. So they need to get all the bowlers, and they'll have to actually specifically film them or get the film of all the great international bowlers and domestic bowlers as well to make it very, very useful for professionals. But once they've done that, I think it's got boundless potential.
Yeah, you can practice all day, can't you?
Yeah.
You can have a proper, if you get it right, you can have a 2-hour net session at home against proper bowling under those sort of match circumstances. And we all know with technology that, you know, what's a prototype this year is, you know, really well developed 3-4 years down the line. Mm. And, you know, who knows? The sky's the limit on something like this. One thing I would say about this, though, it's all in favour of the batsman. What about the poor old bowlers? You know, a batsman can just stand there in your bedroom and practice for a couple of hours as a 12-year-old or 14-year-old. But what about the poor old bowlers, though? I mean, that's so much harder to help them with technology.
And we haven't yet really come up with it. I mean, I know that certainly the development in sort of knee replacements and hip replacements with the titanium available now is certainly helping.
So titanium bowlers?
I mean, the bionic bowlers is what you need. I'm just thinking, actually, I have found a possible solution, not to necessarily getting bowlers bowling faster or more accurately, but maybe keeping their fitness for longer. But that's something I'm going to talk about next week. It's a little innovation that someone has approached me with, which might just help bowlers stay on the field for longer. By the way, that little story about the virtual reality is in a book that I'm writing at the moment, which is very much looking at the future of the game. It's called Pitch Invasion: How the IPL Transformed Sport. And I'm writing it with Manoj Badali, the owner of the Rajasthan Royals. But it's very much about the evolution of cricket generally and how it fits into the sort of wider framework of sport generally and the business of sport. So that story is contained in there. Look out for that. And talking of looking out for things, please, please subscribe to the Cricketer magazine, or look out for the mag this Friday. It's the preview of the season. It's our best issue yet. It's an absolute bumper full of really interesting features, including, of course, a preview of each county season. So please subscribe to that if you can. And thanks very much for listening, and we'll speak to you next week.
Goodbye for now.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.